This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Good afternoon. It's the Adam Gold Show. I'm Adam Gold. It's a lot going on. Dennis Cox is here on the ones and twos. Hey, I was a little distracted a second ago.
Yeah.
What was the focus of our open?
Okay. So we're going to talk to Bob Pockrass in 15 minutes.
Yeah, we are. Bob Pockrass covers NASCAR for Fox. Oh, so based on what we're
going to...
So you put the open together based on the two disqualifications at Pocono.
Yes.
All right. By the way, I went snowmobiling at Pocono. In the mountains of western Pennsylvania when I was a kid.
Oh, okay. So this weekend?
No, not this weekend. Although, you never know, man. Weather's...
It's weird.
We live in crazy times.
So, that double disqualification, the person finishing third winning the race, reminded me of Talladega Nights.
Oh, okay.
And Cal Naughton Jr. finally getting a win.
Did that happen in Talladega Nights?
That's exactly what happened in Talladega Nights.
I have not yet seen Talladega Nights.
It's on you.
It's still in the theaters, right?
I think it is.
Yeah. You were telling me that Sacha Baron Cohen is in that movie.
He is.
He is a wild man. He is absolutely a wild man. My favorite Sacha Baron Cohen role? Mm-hmm. King Julian from Madagascar.
Oh, okay.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal performance. How that did not win an Academy Award, I do not know. There was just some things going on here before the show, so I wasn't dialed in. Wasn't dialed in.
It's training camp season. You should be dialed in.
I am. I am incredibly dialed in. And we are going to talk training camp because Will Brinson will be here. So we will discuss that with him. We've got a bunch of things that we are going to touch on today. A little bit more about college sports from an SEC angle. We'll get that from Barrett Silley of CBSSports.com. And there are just a lot of things going on. And we're not even going to start with football. Because there's even more going on than that. So if you're ready, I'm ready. They're off. Is Kevin Garnett? All right, Kevin Garnett.
Who's Kevin Garnett?
I was talking to my son about Kevin Garnett today. I don't know why Kevin Garnett just...
You're all sorts of distracted already. So your old friend walks in here before the show. It's like, hey, oh, there's a show starting. Let me get out of here.
This whole thing is weird, man.
It's Monday.
Yeah, I'm just trying to make some last minute corrections here. All right, so is Kevin Durant that Kevin? Kevin Smith. Is Kevin Durant headed to the Boston Celtics?
Kevin McAllister.
So we know he wants out of Brooklyn. We know that Phoenix was the original destination, but then DeAndre Ayton, who would have been part of any deal between Phoenix and Brooklyn, got presented with an offer sheet from Indiana, and when the Suns matched the offer sheet, Ayton could not be traded. You cannot trade a player after matching the offer sheet. If it's not completely in year one, it might be until a certain point of year one, but you can't. So they couldn't trade him now. So Miami and Toronto were other candidates for that. But now, according to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, a Woj bomb, the Celtics are in the mix. How did this happen?
Like everyone else, they called Brooklyn once it was revealed that Kevin Durant had asked for a trade back on June 30th. And, you know, I think like other teams who look at their makeup, where they are in terms of their championship pursuit, and do we have the assets that might interest Brooklyn? And it could bring in Kevin Durant and put us over the top. I think the answers for the Celtics on all those questions are yes. But, of course, at what cost, what price for Boston?
Well, how about Woj just answers his own question now? So what would it cost?
Jaylen Brown, certainly, when you look around the league at the individual players that would be available to the Nets, certainly Jaylen Brown is appealing, 25 years old, an all-star, a legitimate two-way player in the NBA. But he's got 2 years left on his contract. Of course, KD has 4 years left. And then what's the buildup of a trade from there? And as I reported, you know, the Celtics aren't any closer to a KD deal than anybody else who's involved.
All right, I could be wrong here, but if I'm Brooklyn, isn't the price tag Jason Tatum? If I'm Brooklyn, I love Jaylen Brown. But if I'm trading Kyrie... What is wrong?
What happened today?
What happened
to you this weekend? What happened to you?
I'm looking right into the camera, man. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. Look, we might as well just leave. If I'm going to trade Kevin Durant, I want somebody who does Kevin Durant things back. And that's what Jason Tatum is. Now, I'm not saying that, because if I'm Boston, probably ain't giving up Jason Tatum. There's about, what, a 12-year difference in age? Is KD like 35 or 36? And Tatum's 24? I ain't doing it. If I'm Boston.
Kevin Durant will turn 34 in September.
He'll turn 34 in September, and Tatum is probably 24 already. So is a we're talking about a 10-year difference in age. Like, how many more years does KD have at his level, knowing we have a little bit of a history of injury problems, you know, whether it's knee or Achilles or something like that? But if I'm Brooklyn, that's what I'm asking for. I am asking for Tatum, and I'll do it straight up. You don't have to sweeten it at all. I'll do it straight up if you want to do that. With that said, Jaylen Brown, if my ask is Jaylen Brown, well, I need Robert Williams too. If I'm Brooklyn, I want the big guy. Anybody else, the report that they were asking for Marcus Smart, like, no offense, but I think that is situation specific. I want the big dude.
Yeah.
I want Robert Williams if the starting point, the star involved is Jaylen Brown. I also don't know from Boston's standpoint why you want KD and Tatum on the same floor, because I think they do very similar things. We'll talk about this with Brendan Whitted later on, because he knows more about these things, our NBA analyst, one of our several NBA analysts. But that's where I would start. There's other NBA stuff to talk about later on. Adam Gold here from my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. All right, Coach, simple. When do we start tax planning in retirement?
We should start as soon as possible, because here's one thing, Adam, taxes are not going away.
Right.
And so the game here is, we know the rules. A lot of people want to ignore the rules or act like they aren't familiar with them, but the IRS knows the rules. And so when we get to retirement, they're going to reach in and start taking some of their money out of your accounts. So the secret here is to put a force field around as much as possible by strategically moving some of our money to Roth IRA or some of the other vehicles that aren't taxed, like special life insurance policies. You can borrow against your money there and never have to pay tax on your money that you build up inside your cash value. So there are a lot of strategies here. The one strategy that does not work is ignoring it. So let's make sure to not ignore it. The next 10 people will do for for you your very own tax and retirement plan that'll help you minimize taxation all the way through retirement.
800-661-7383. All you got is call, or you can text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuda. Right now, we got training camp time, Dennis. There you go. That's, again, we have to find a different NFL soundbite. It just sounds like a bunch of guys vomiting. Training camp time. Now that Baker Mayfield has been dealt to the Panthers, the NFL's media arms, meaning everyone, seriously, everyone, they need to find a new daily topic of discussion. Remember, we spent essentially a month and a half talking about Baker Mayfield almost every day.
Yeah.
Right. Almost every day. Not us, but the sports TV establishment every day talked Baker Mayfield. It seems that they are settling on Lamar Jackson, which, frankly, considering how good he is, makes more sense than talking about Baker Mayfield every day. Ravens reporter Jameson Hensley has the latest on Lamar.
At what point does Lamar Jackson say, okay, by his style of play, and he has taken more contact than any quarterback has ever taken in the first 4 years of his career, at what point does he say, okay, because of my style of play, I am more prone to injury, so you're going to have to pay me at some point, or I have to adjust my style of play, because why would he put himself at risk at when he's playing under a contract that gives him no long-term security at all?
Right. But the reason why Lamar Jackson doesn't have a long-term contract right now appears to be more about Lamar Jackson than it does the Baltimore Ravens, unless the Ravens are lowballing, which they might be.
Yeah.
In which case, Lamar Jackson is smart. You don't take the best deal that they offer. You take the best deal that your value can get. Because after this year, Lamar Jackson will get, I believe, an exclusive franchise tag that will put his value at 45 and, you know, like $45.5 million. And then if they franchise tag him the next year, that'll go up to about $54.5 million. So if he gets through this year, while there won't be a guarantee, Jackson will have about $100 million coming to him in 2 years. Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
Jackson is not playing this poorly. But I also think that Jackson is a unique individual. He is under contract right now. He was at minicamp. And he is going to play because that's what he does. And it's very cool. It also appears that we're going to get a daily Jimmy Garoppolo update, which I think is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty clear the 49ers are hoping to deal him, but to where and for who or what? Aaron Schatz, Football Outsiders, says there's nothing out there.
There's no market for him, which is, I mean, I think that he is still a talented guy. Does he have his drawbacks? Absolutely. But among players who have similar drawbacks to him, his performance has always been really strong. And at a certain point, you have to sort of accept that he has been efficient and productive in the right offensive schemes. I mean, I think from what I'm seeing, the only real market for him is Cleveland, based on what happens with the Watson suspension, which we're all just sort of waiting for them to come down with the Watson suspension. So, I mean, I would much rather have Garoppolo for half a season than Jacoby Brissett. And if that's a full season suspension, then you're basically throwing the year away with Brissett. Whereas Garoppolo, with that offense, you know, which is very play-action based, plays to Garoppolo's strength, you've got a chance to be competitive with. But I don't know what other teams are really in it at this point.
All right, here's my question, Dennis. I'm going to ask you to rank these three quarterbacks in order of ability.
Okay.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
All right.
Baker Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Darnold.
probably Jimmy G, Baker, Sam.
1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. Panthers, get on it.
Like, make it happen, Fitterer.
If the 49ers are willing to eat a bunch of the salary, if it's not going to cost you much, then let's get on it. It's not hard. It's not complicated. The Panthers have appeared to have been very, very interested in incremental improvement at the quarterback position. You're getting to the point where, hey, this guy might be a top 20 NFL starting quarterback. We're closing in on it. Jimmy Garoppolo is competent. Very competent. He does dumb things. Sure. But he is incredibly competent. And I like it. I would do it. If I were the Carolina Panthers, I would do it. By the way, the XFL hasn't even come back yet. They are already expanded. They added, what, 3 more cities? Orlando, San Antonio, and Houston?
I don't know if necessarily added, but maybe changed.
Oh, they exchanged.
Yes.
Oh, okay, I get that. Sometimes you sometimes you buy a city and it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
And you exchange it for another city.
Yeah. Yeah. There's still 8 teams.
I don't even know the cities that they dumped. I got a bunch more football stuff to talk about. We'll do that with Will Brinson at the bottom of the hour.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcast.
Bob Pockrass covers NASCAR for Fox Sports, and he joins us. And the reason I reached out to Mr. Pockrass is because it's been more than 60 years, or as the kids say, it's been a minute since NASCAR disqualified a winner. And in this case, they disqualified the winner and essentially the show horse. No, show is the third. The place horse, the top two finishers, get out of here. And Chase Elliott was declared the winner without ever having let a lap at Pocono. Bob Pockrass, how odd, how strange was this to cover?
It's really strange. I mean, look, about 3 years ago, NASCAR said they would start disqualifying drivers whose cars fail post-race inspection. Because for decades, NASCAR felt that, hey, the fans see a driver take the checkered flag, they should expect that driver is the winner. So right. Even if that car failed inspection, they would, you know, fine them heavily, dock them a lot of points, but that driver got to keep the trophy. And when it kept happening, fans were like, you know, this is ridiculous. Strip them of the win, which is what they do at most other racing series. And NASCAR said, okay, that's what we'll do. And they've disqualified cup drivers who finished second, who finished third, who finished fourth, but never a winner until Sunday. And that was the first time in 62 years that a cup driver had been DQ'd from a race.
Here's what's interesting to me. Bob Pockrass from Fox Sports, who covers NASCAR, is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. That Denny Hamlin tweeted out a picture later on with, I believe, his daughter, who had the checkered flag. And he said to, you know, good luck getting it from her. So I think that checkered flag is probably safe, at least for now, in the Hamlin household. How is this being received all over the place? And why didn't they catch these mistakes pre-race?
Yeah, so to answer the second question first, NASCAR said they found a material in the nose of the car that the team isn't allowed to have. And it's a material that they saw after they peeled off the wrap of, you know, the sponsor wrap.
Right.
And they don't peel the wrap off a car during pre-race inspection, because then they'd all have to repair
right
and put it back on. And they don't. And it's a a 45-minute or even more process to put on a full ramp. So that it's not like the cars can come really unwrapped. So that's why they didn't find it in pre-race inspection. How's it being received? I think everybody's still wait and see, want to see exactly what it was. They want to see if it's overturned on appeal, if Joe Gibbs Racing appeals. And, they want to kind of see what, whether it was something that people made that teams felt like made a big difference or not. But I can tell you this, we talked to Chase Elliott this morning, and he was like, he kind of still feels like he finished third. He's not out there celebrating. And I asked him, if Denny has the trophy, how's he going to get it? And he said, if Denny wants to keep the trophy, Denny can have it.
Really? that is very interesting. Now, his car also was inspected post-race, correct?
Correct.
So, and his car passed. Now, this is something I was unaware of, and you probably are not surprised that I was unaware of this, because Bob, as many times as we've spoken, I think you have gathered that I am, at best, a very surface fan of the sport. But they're using kit cars this year. So explain to me, are basically all the chassis the same?
They're all the same. So NASCAR, NASCAR had become this sport where teams were just outspending each other on research and development and developing pieces. And the teams were spending so much money on that and building cars and building and doing everything it takes to build a car, that in order to try to create parity and to try to cut costs and kind of not even just cut costs, but to be able to say, okay, if you have this much money, you should be able to get a car or get the pieces for a car and assemble it, that this year NASCAR, in developing an entirely new car, virtually all the parts and pieces are bought from vendors. And it's a single vendor for each part and piece. So you buy your chassis from this person, you buy the bodies from this person. The only thing different is for each manufacturer are the engines. That's the only difference. So it's a way to create parity, but of course it also took away potentially some of the ingenuity that the crew chiefs had. And along with it, it created, NASCAR saying that, look, if you mess with these parts and pieces that you're not supposed to mess with, that you're just supposed to buy and assemble and bolt on the car, then we're going to have big penalties for it. So they've kind of been on the lookout this year for what teams could be doing, in order to, kind of circumvent those rules.
I'm also kind of looking at this all of a sudden from the manufacturer's point of view going, man, if I can't have my, at least a sort of version of my Malibu or whatever the Ford car is, used to be the Taurus for a while, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't have that, then, mm-hmm. I'm not saying cares about the engine, but you understand, right?
But absolutely. So I should say the body pieces are all made by the same company, but they are different per manufacturer as the shape. And they've all been to the wind tunnel, and they're all supposed to meet, a certain specification. Now, there's some question whether they all still do after NASCAR made a bunch of changes to the cars. And so NASCAR has to keep taking the cars back to the wind tunnel. But yes, there is some body identification areas, especially in the front and the nose in the nose of the car.
So, what was the material that, if that has even been released, that was found?
NASCAR hasn't released it yet. I think that's what every tech reporter and crew chief's text chains are this morning.
Right, but they said,
and if you work in the sport, you're looking, you're trying to find out exactly what it was.
They said it impacted the aerodynamics of the car, and that's really why they disqualified him, because they felt like it helped the aerodynamics of the car. There was one other story that came out this weekend, and I wanted to get your take on this, Bob Pockrass from Fox Sports, NASCAR reporter. Joe Gibbs Racing is the owner of the two teams that finished one and two, So they've been eliminated. And Joe Gibbs' grandson, Ty, made news by filling in for Kurt Busch. Kyle Busch was the second driver who got DQ'd. Kurt Busch couldn't race this week because of a head injury. So Ty Gibbs, Joe's grandkid, what, 19 years old, makes his debut? What's going on?
Makes his debut. I mean, look, Ty Gibbs has won four races this year in the Xfinity Series, which is NASCAR's version of AAA.
Yeah.
A lot of people believe that he's ready to go cup racing. You know, Joe Gibbs Racing has not signed Kyle Busch yet for next year. There's many people who think that Ty Gibbs should go in that car if they can't get a deal done with Kyle. There's another group that said that question, you know, whether he is just ready as a 19-year-old for the rigor of a 38-week cup schedule and the demand of that. But if there is any question of whether he can race a cup car, I think some of that was answered yesterday. He had some simulator time at 1 a.m. on Sunday morning to get ready for the race Sunday afternoon. And he went out there and he crossed the line in 18th and he ended up finishing 16th after the DQs. You know, a very solid performance for him. And this is his first full year in Xfinity. He did a partial schedule last year. And again, you know, some people say, why not just move him up to the cup level now? But there's also, I mean, they just know that it just takes a certain level of kind of maturity and a certain level of just, you know, preparation to be able to handle kind of the ups and downs and all the adversity you face during a cup season.
Yeah, he also needs his own fire suit. He apparently doesn't have his own fire suit. He wore Kurt Busch's fire suit and Denny Hamlin's shoes, which, you know what? He's 19, so maybe he just doesn't have all that stuff on his own yet. Bob Pockrass, Fox Sports, I appreciate your time, man. Thanks for putting up with me.
All right, thank you.
You got it, Bob Pockrass. That's just a great story. Good for Ty Gibbs.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.